Our next guest is a regular here on Catholic Connection, Joan Lewis, host of Joan's Rome and the Vatican Insider. Joan, thanks for joining us.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How's Rome?
Rome is lovely. We've gone from very hot temperatures to bearable temperatures, and of course it's the lovely, wonderful, historic, beautiful, eternal city.
Yes. Well, we've fluctuated here too, in the Metro Detroit area from 80s to 60s. So, but that's Michigan for you. So tell us, Joan, about the weekly general audience continuing catechism on confirmation.
Well, the Pope is continuing. I think this is the third or fourth, catechesis he's done on a Wednesday on the sacrament of confirmation, looking at the various aspects, the words used in confirmation, as well as the signs of the sacrament. And of course, he said, you know, as all living members of Christ's mystical body, the Church, we're called to share in the life of the mission. And this is really given to us in a fuller extent in confirmation, because we became part of that mission, obviously, in baptism. But then, as the Pope calls it today, as an eloquent sign of this ecclesial dimension, confirmation is conferred. Of course, he noted, by the diocesan bishops. It's not done by the pastor in a local church. And he said the bishop, of course, is the successor of the apostle, and so he was the first one charged with fostering the church's unity through the diversity of the Spirit's gifts. And in just a summary of the papal audience today, and there were about 20,000 people in St. Peter's Square for the audience this morning. And
oh, I think we lost Joan a bit there, Andrew. We're talking with Joan Lewis, so we're going to get her back on the line. This technical issue sometimes happens. She is in Rome. So sometimes we have some issues, although it's great technology that we're able to do this at all and get her on the air from several miles away, thousands of miles away. But Joan is giving us an update on the weekly general audience, continuing catechism and confirmation. And so the Pope, dear brothers and sisters, I'll just read a little bit until we can get her back on. Our continuing catechesis on confirmation, we now consider some of its effects. The gift of the Holy Spirit received in the sacrament enables us in turn to become a gift. Okay, so we got Joan back. I was just reading a little bit of what you sent me, Joan. The gift of others within the communion of the church. So continue the Pope's talk on confirmation and, you know, the bishops exchanging of this with newly confirmed.
Right. I don't know at what point we lost the phone connection, but
it's okay. Just
talking about the confirmation as the extension, the eloquent sign, as the Holy Father said, of our mission, our life and mission in the universal church. And confirmation just extends the grace and so forth that we received in baptism, becoming part of this church. Mm-hmm. But the Holy Father really stressed that the fact that this is ordinarily confirmed by the diocesan bishop. Confirmation is not confirmed by just the pastor. I don't mean just the pastor, but by the pastor of a church. Mm-hmm. But it's the bishop who's the successor of the apostles, and that's why it is a bishop who does confirm this sacrament. So as he ended the summary in English anyway today, the Holy Father said, may we who have received the sacrament open our hearts each day to the liberating breath of the Holy Spirit and fan into flame the gifts we have received for the good of one another, the church, and the world in which we live. And he's speaking to each one of us, Vanessa, when he says this, to you and I, who our particular, if you want to say, gift is the ministry of communication, and all of the people listening to us have different ministries. I mean, we can have listeners who are housewives, mothers, fathers, dentists, lawyers, chefs, etc. And each in our own way, we have this ministry, but we have this gift as Christians that in some small or large way, we are asked to pass on to others, make the world aware of the fact that we're Christians. As the saying goes, if I was accused of being a Christian and had to go to court, would there be enough evidence to convict me? So
yeah, I mean, confirmation is a great time to start having that conversation with people about their own ministry and what they're called to do as a Christian as they confirm their faith.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a time when, you know, it's still young people, teen, preteen, that receive, and many adults, of course, do receive confirmation later, but it's a time for a good conversation between the young people, maybe, and their parents who might have forgotten their own confirmation day, and the meaning of the sacrament. We all have sponsors for that, and I have been a sponsor for a niece, for example, in the sacrament of confirmation. So it's not that it's a one-day liturgical event and then a wonderful lunch or dinner party afterwards, and then we go on our separate ways. We've really got to remember that. And those of us who are sponsors also in baptism for someone, a niece or a nephew or whoever that person may be, we have a specific role to play if we have been sponsors in baptism and confirmation. So just think of what the word means, confirming us in our faith. So.
And it's a great time to have that conversation, and maybe it'll even help the sponsors kind of, like you said, go back to their own confirmation day and think about what they've done in their own ministry and their own life and bringing others to Christ. So just a time to reflect. The Pope also talked about communion for Protestants married to Catholics. What can you tell us about that?
Well, this is a very, very big issue here right now in Rome, especially, of course, and especially across the street from my house is the building that houses the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. And they recently issued a letter basically answering questions by the German Catholic Bishops Conference. And here's the thing. A majority of German bishops earlier this year voted to publish guidelines that would have made it easier for Protestants to receive the Eucharist at Mass in a Catholic church and sometimes wine, of course, that they've been consecrated. Now, there are many marriages in Germany where one spouse is Catholic and the other is Protestant, usually Lutheran. Mm-hmm. And so this subject of what's known as intercommunion in marriages between the Catholics and Protestants came up because many of the bishops wrote in the German Episcopal Conference that they wanted to have this communion, but then there were a minority of bishops who wrote to the Vatican and said, this can't be, it's against our teaching of communion, and you have to believe in the real presence to be, obviously, to go to communion, even as a Catholic and so forth. So the bishops asked for and received a meeting on May 3rd with Cardinal Luis Ladaria. He's head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. And in essence, what happened after this meeting was that the cardinal referred back to the Holy Father. Here's what I told them. Here's what they told me. And the Pope basically said, you've got to come back with a document that supports, that is unanimous. And so right now it's the bishops in Germany are allowed to decide on a case-to-case basis whether the non-Catholic spouse in a marriage with the Catholic could receive communion. And you just have to look at it. Think of, Vanessa, the little missalettes that we have in churches today that, you know, you're traveling around the U.S., you go into a church that's not your parish, and you have this missalette, and there's guidelines somewhere on the front cover, back cover, somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
There's
guidelines
to non-Catholics. And in other words, you can't receive communion because you are not, you as a Lutheran, as a Protestant, are not in communion with the church. And I know some of the German bishops said, well, I mean, some of the people who were reacting to the German bishop decision was, wait a minute, if we're asked, if this Protestant spouse is asked to believe in the real presence in the wine or the host, then why wouldn't they be Catholic? I mean, if you can go so far as to admit there's the real presence in the Eucharist, then why would you not be the Catholic. Mm-hmm. So there's many, many issues here that have to be looked at because the German bishop's decision could not, how could it apply to the Catholic Church if it goes against the magisterium, the current teaching on this issue, you know?
I'm going to continue this because I have a question about this, but we got to take a break. But even in the Catholic faith, Joan, you know, we can address this when we come back from the break, but you're supposed to go to confession even before you take communion. So I want to talk about more about this when we come back. Let's take a break and we'll continue our conversation with Joan Lewis, Jones, Rome, and the Vatican Insider. Stay with us, everyone. We're continuing our conversation with Joan Lewis, host of Jones, Rome, and the Vatican Insider. We're talking about communion for Protestants married to Catholics and what's going on and with the German bishops. And Joan, what I have an issue with or what I want to really address, I mean, as Catholics, we're supposed to go to communion before we, I mean, confession before we have communion. So how does that tie into all of this?
Well, actually, what it's a case of would be if there's mortal sin, then you are disconnected, if you will, from the church. So in the case of mortal sin, to have access to communion, you would then have to go to confession for the mortal sin. Obviously, it would be ideal every day, but I mean, think of people, Catholics, who go to Mass every day. They're not going to go to confession every single day, either before or during Mass. So it's really in the case of very, very serious sin. But again, like you were pointing out, if the person is not a Catholic, they're also not going to confession. So if there is a serious sin, I mean, Vanessa, there are, you know, 15 different ways to look at the teaching of the Catholic Church on communion, what's licit, what isn't. And I posted a column probably a week ago, or slightly less, written by Archbishop Chaput of Philadelphia, who said very, very clearly, here is why we can't even think of offering communion to the non-Catholic spouse in a Catholic, non-Catholic marriage. Mm-hmm. And he laid out the entire case, the teaching of the Catholic Church on this issue. And it's not that there's no compassion in this, that there's no, yes, we bishops want to be more pastoral and compassionate. And that's fine. And the mayor of a city may wish to be compassionate. And on a case-to-case basis, you can go through a red light. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So right now, being pastoral, wanting to be compassionate, is a wonderful thing to do. But if it goes against the entire two millennia of church teaching, then I think we have to be careful. And, you know, if any of our listeners want to do a search, just go to Google, put Archbishop Charles Chaput's name in, and put intercommunion. And you will find the most comprehensive, understandable defense of the Catholic Church that also includes his wanting to say, yes, I want to be compassionate. Yes, I want to be pastoral. But I can't be pastoral and tell a person to go through a red light when they can't, you know? Mm. So it's a big news story here. It involves, obviously, one of the foremost congregations for the doctrine of the faith.
And I'm sure it'll continue this conversation.
Hearing more about this, the Holy Father asked the bishops to please get back to me when you've come up with the proper guidelines and you have a near unanimous decision on this. So we'll be following this case, and you can find it on, obviously, my website and different Catholic news, you know, Catholic news agencies. We follow all these things. So,
Joan, we have 1 minute left, and, you know, it's a hard break. We got it. The show's going to end. Any last words you want to leave our listeners this morning?
Actually, earlier I was seeing a little spot on Fox News about the upcoming summit in Singapore with the president and with the leader of North Korea. And I think we should, whatever our feelings are, I think we should definitely pray for the two world leaders, for all those who are working behind the scenes to make some kind of an agreement come about. I am a firm believer that something very positive can come out of this, but that it's only the beginning.
Well,
I don't think we're going to have earth-shattering news in one meeting, but please pray for everyone next week. It's so important.
Will do. Thanks, Joan. We'll continue this conversation here on Catholic Connection tomorrow. Vanessa Dunn-Hagarmo filling in for Teresa Tamio. Have a blessed day.